In 1909, in an anti-colonial move toward Indian self-sufficiency, Gandhi decided to revive a craft many saw as already defunct, the hand spinning of cotton into thread. In the 1920s, he called upon everyone in India, regardless of class, region, or religion, to spin thread for at least half an hour each day. He saw spinning as an economic and political activity that could bring together the diverse populations of South Asia. Gandhi's program of spinning as practice and deployment of the spinning wheel as icon represents one of the most significant unifying elements of the nationalist movement in India and a key component of the struggle for Swaraj, or self-rule. Spinning allowed the formerly elite nationalist movement to connect to the broader Indian population, and it enabled the production of a unifying pan-Indian national symbolism that transcended regional, caste, class, and religious divisions. Spinning on an upright wheel had been part of Indian culture for over a millennium. But visual culture... Sure. There's some visual culture, right? There it goes. Okay. Visual culture rarely depicted the spinner at the wheel in these early centuries. With the emergence of a colonial demand for vignettes of cottage industry, paintings of spinning began to multiply in the early 19th century. With the arrival of photography in the 1840s and the subsequent focus on encapsulating ethnic and professional types, images of spinning actually fade, only later to be purposively and energetically revived by the nationalist political movement led by Gandhi in the first decades of the 20th century. This transformation might be illustrated. Try again. It's confused. This might be illustrated in the shift from a circa 1785 dynamic image of spinning to the 1940 studio portrait of Gandhi's wife, Kasturba, seated at the wheel. What both images have in common is rhythm, the embrace of a kind of polyrhythm, what I have called in another piece, polyrhythm, in the 18th century example, and the arresting of rhythm into a pantomime of movement in the studio photograph. For the 18th century painting, the representation of rhythm and motion takes part in a larger layering of colonial era temporalities that work together but are not necessarily in sync. In contrast, the early 20th century image presents a demand to be in time with the asymmetrical, syncopated gesture of the spinner, to embody the spinner through pose and motion. Gandhi's program to promote... Sorry. I don't know what's happening. Works perfectly. Gandhi's program to promote spinning as a central shared activity for the nationalist movement demanded a commitment to learning a skill, practicing it daily, and doing it well. That virtuosity in performing an action involves working in a particular rhythm in time with others. In this paper, I take this one step further to argue that the demand for rhythmic virtuosity relies on a radical presumption of equality among those called upon to spin, that is, those in favor of Swaraj, whether Indian or not. Spinning interrupts the normal occupation, the normal daily rhythms of the spinner, moving him or her beyond a given social role and therefore breaking out of the Platonic demand that an artisan can only practice one skill well. In order to overcome the constructed presumed gap between political activists and the wider population, Gandhi's call for artful, faithful spinning began from a presumption that everyone had the capacity to spin. Reading this move through Rancière's pedagogical theory of the ignorant schoolmaster, one finds in the reinvigoration of spinning as action a political maneuver not to claim equality as a right, but to presume equality and then provide the motivating call for everyone to join in political action. In what follows, I outline the contrast in spinning's rhythmic temporality between the early 19th century and the early 20th, detail Gandhi's demand that anti-colonial spinning be a meditative process and produce a high-quality product, and then link these two historical moments through the tensions that produce moments of shared rhythm and moments of being offbeat and out of sync. So the paintings of spinning from the early 19th century were produced by Indian painters and sold, often in sets, to a range of buyers, primarily European, but also Indian elites. These portable paintings of spinning, and these five, by the way, are all in the same set at the Royal Ontario Museum. These portable paintings of spinning circulate with other images showing the stages of cloth production and jostle in the archives with depictions of other activities. Other activities.
these activities,
such as a potter at the wheel. I have all my notes. Okay, this is embarrassing. I'm sorry. Let's try again. Okay, such as a potter at the wheel and these women skinning fish, which are actually in the same exact set as the objects at the ROM. So these paintings, I argue, do not take part in an ethnographic project of cataloging India's people, but instead, as a group, depict people actually doing things. So they are really about action, and then in combination with the motion of these actual objects around the world and in reflecting on them in collections and people bringing them together, this is where I developed this idea of a colonial temporality and a polyrhythm with these objects. Okay, if you don't mind, I'm going to pause and put the PowerPoint presentation up. Challenging. What you're missing out on is the films that I have on my iPad, which did not translate to the PowerPoint presentation. Later. Yes, so I'll play it individually for you. Okay. All right, so my apologies for that. Okay, so these paintings are moving about, producing. I kind of envision these paintings, by the way, in my head as like little animated sort of films where you actually have a spinner spinning, and there's the rhythm of that, and then the rhythm of the movement, and then it's going down the Ganges, and there's the rhythm of the people showing it to their friends back in Europe or Canada, in this case of these objects. Okay, so there's this multiple repeated duration, small accelerations and decelerations, and the shifting viscosities of history and memory all coalesce in these sets of paintings in an overlapping polyrhythmic mode. Gandhi saw the benefit of spinning as a central element of his anti-colonial movement precisely because it slipped out of categories that divided the subcontinent. He resignified spinning as a political activity, one practiced by both men and women, and used it to enable a wide range of actors to participate in the movement, whether by themselves, at home, or in group spinning contexts. In emphasizing the practice of spinning, Gandhi's program re-injected action to the isolated, static, and staged photographs of Indians circulating in the decades prior. His vision reinserted doing into hand industry and the self-image of India's people. So after a gap in the late 19th century, he pulls out this idea of doing from the early 19th. But Gandhi did not simply suggest that people start spinning without guidance, nor did he think that spinning was particularly easy. Indeed, he didn't get it quite right in the beginning himself. His initial epiphany that everyone should spin was in fact misspoken and misthought, I think. He called for everyone to weave, a mistake he discussed in 1928 as a way of articulating his own transformation from a novice to an expert spinner. After he set up the ashram at Sabarmati in Gujarat in western India, it took 2 years before he was able to find someone who not only had a spinning wheel, but could teach them how to use it. In contrast, hand weaving was widely practiced, and they set up looms at the ashram fairly quickly. Spinning was thus valued as something anyone could do, but only if they committed to the process of that doing. Essays in Young India and elsewhere from the time, written primarily by Gandhi and his nephew, Maganlal Gandhi, discuss the different types of spinning wheel, how to make a simple drop spindle or tukli, as you see on the screen, and emphasize the need to make spinning economically accessible to even the poorest of Indians. Alongside concerns to lower the cost of entry for everyday people, however, lies the repeated message that spinning does not come easily. It requires practice to get it right. It is difficult, if not impossible, to learn from a book. Novices should seek out an expert to learn from. The essays praise initiatives that bring groups together to teach spinning, sending each student off to teach others in their home village or municipality. So the initial apprenticeship style for Mises has several political effects, most prominently the organization of groups and the connection among disparate people who share the desire to participate in the anti-colonial movement. The call to spin instigated small gatherings of people to learn and hone their skills, created networks of spinners that persisted even after initial tutelage, as most depended on the structure of the All India Spinning Association to provide raw material, usually cotton, to spin with. Once one learned how to spin, Gandhi urged everyone to do so every day, taking half an hour to an hour, and dedicating that labor time to the larger project of self-rule as an individual project of self-rule. Spinning could also be done in groups, and often was, but whether in a group or alone, Gandhi wrote that spinning should be spiritual, and he, if practiced with due concentration, should demonstrate and build the self-discipline of the spinner. In this, Gandhi echoes long-standing European values attached to spinning as a task perceived as curbing the passions of undisciplined young women. In the anti-colonial South Asian context, Gandhi advocated this for men, women, and school children as part of a larger call for self-rule. In his many defenses of spinning and the charkha, or the wheel, and in an attempt to convince wealthier followers to take up spinning, Gandhi turned to language related to faith, the Brahmacharya tradition, silence, salvation, sacrifice, and inward reflection. Spinning could provide day-to-day subsistence to those at the very bottom of the economic spectrum, but for those for whom the income was not necessary, Gandhi called on their duty to be an example to the larger populace and to practice spinning for these additional spiritual benefits. But these benefits must be embedded in the heart, and spinning could not be done mechanically, but it must be done with attention and commitment. When asked, for example, whether one could sing bhajans or devotional songs while spinning, Gandhi clarified his advice to spin in silence. Quote, "In recommending silence, I implied that no one should gossip with those sitting around. I certainly did not imply that he who maintains silence should not sing a bhajan about Rama in his heart. The peasant's lips sing the bhajan by force of habit, but his mind may well be wandering elsewhere at that time. Hence, we cannot acquit ourselves by singing bhajans aloud while spinning. It is only when the tongue is always in tune with the heart that the singing of a bhajan may be regarded as worthwhile." So it's very specific about, you know, what, you shouldn't be gossiping under the tree while you're spinning. So it's a rigorous, focused practice, one that promotes a type of self-rule Gandhi saw as connecting India's people. If Gandhi's emphasis on the mental focus required to practice spinning properly demands a level of commitment and dedication from each spinner, a related focus on the quality of the product produced from this activity extends the mental focus in physical practice to the material object of thread or yarn. Gandhi's writings include extensive discussions of the quality of yarn, from calculations regarding expected output from a given amount of raw material to the friendly chiding of his colleagues as they struggle to produce even a tola, which is 3/8 of an ounce of spun yarn. And again, I quote, "The big brother," by that he means Maulana Shaukat Ali, the brother of Maulana Muhammad Ali, who was president of the Congress, "made a mighty effort, but succeeded in sending only one tola of indifferently spun yarn." If there was no fear of the reader accusing me of partiality towards the brothers, I would say that this is not a bad record for one who is constitutionally ill-fitted for continuous spinning and who is always on the move. Maulana Shaukat Ali has, however, given me the assurance that he is going to send the full quantity, which is 2,000 yards or 10 tolas of 10-count well-spun yarn, for the next month." Unquote. Followers of Gandhi's spinning program were constantly encouraged. Oh, and I'm sorry, I have a picture of the man in question. They were constantly encouraged to produce good quality, high count, well-twisted yarn and to send that to the AISA. Contests for refining the spinning reel apparatus also included discussions of upkeep of your equipment. So, quote, "I've taken it for granted that every child who sends or will send his yarn to the AISA is fond of his wheel. Besides, a boy who does his spinning with interest will master all the details about the various parts of his spinning wheel. A carpenter always cleans his own tools. And just as a carpenter who does not know how to clean his own tools can hardly be ranked as a carpenter. Similarly, a boy who cannot prepare his own mal, winding string, make his own sari, composition applied to the spindle, or prepare his spindle holders can hardly be called a spinner. He is only the travesty of a spinner." Demand for quality, as you can see, runs throughout all of this discussion of spinning, and it also actually redounds back on Gandhi. So periodically he's ill and can't spin in the proper way, and so talks about the falling off of the quality of his own yarn, and it's all tied up with this logic of svaraj, or self-rule. So these letters of advice to keen followers and defenses of spinning against critical voices represent the textual visibility of spinning. Photographs and films of spinning usually focus on the primary figures of the movement. Gandhi, Abdul-Hafar Khan, whom you see on the left, and Nehru, rather than the everyday spinner. Indeed, some of the appeal of spinning as a political mobilizing tool lay in its invisibility. One could spin in the quiet and privacy of the home, in breaks between other daily tasks, or in the off-season, and then deposit your yarn with a local khadi organization. The link between the quality of the mental, physical, and material meant that the product could be used as a measure of commitment without public performance. And this actually connects to something in your paper about the performance of the tribesmen supporting the regime. This is when you are in public, you kind of support the regime in some small way. So to be invisible, I thought, was an interesting contrast. That you could be participating and still be in your home. And so what this meant was that this benefited those unable to march publicly because they had, you know, jobs and families to tend to, enabled women to participate without mixing with unknown men, and created a connection across the country among those working alone, but in tandem with a whole host of imagined others. Spinning came out into the open in group spinning events, where photography could capture the scope of the participation, and film could capture the physical rhythm of the participants working together. This is where I was going to have the film, so apologies. A.K. Chatiar's 1940 documentary on Gandhi illustrates one type of group spinning imagery. Hundreds of women, seated on the ground behind spinning wheels in neat rows, spin at the same time. In contrast to photographs that highlight the uniformifying force of khadi clothing, these images provide a sense of the crowd through the repetition of both the spinning wheels themselves and the bodies. The overall rhythmic effect of their arms and bodies balances the unity of the repetitious crowd, with an emphasis on the fact that those in the crowd physically move and work as part of their participation. The women, actually, their movements are not entirely synchronized, so it's not like they're a synchronized swimming group or anything like that. But the motion is very asymmetrical, so it sort of goes up, and then the next woman will have her hand go up, and then the next. So it's almost like a wave that's a kind of interesting, varied rhythm. So they are, as a group, in sync, sharing and performing the same movements. And they embody the concentration, commitment, and physical quality that Gandhi calls for in his text. They don't sing songs or chit-chat or any of that. And then, in contrast, Chatiar's film also includes footage of Nehru, seated on the floor in a grand hallway, spinning on a box charka, a flat square charka. This scene illustrates a man out of sync. Nehru struggles to pull the yarn, to complete even one full gesture with the spinning wheel. It elicited laughter from audiences when screened in India, and rather accurately portrays Nehru as not quite fully faithful to Gandhi's idea of the spinner. One imagines that he too, like the Ali brothers, might produce indifferently spun yarn. Where early colonial paintings of spinning participated in a polyrhythmic overlapping set of temporal modes, from the rhythm of the spinner to that of the circulation of the paintings in the marketplace to the temporal viscosities of memory and nostalgia, the anti-colonial movement's appropriation of spinning, especially in its demand for quality of mental and physical practice and of material output, produced a demand for synchronicity, a demand that sought inclusion but also, as seen with Nehru's lack of rhythm, produced exclusion. Gandhi's call did presume that everyone had the capacity to spin. It presumed a radical equality. But that did not mean that everyone, in fact, spun with the proper attention and dedication, producing a high-quality yarn that embodied these commitments. For Gandhi, without faith, Swaraj was not possible, and therefore one must treat spinning as a sacred duty, a sacrament, a practice of worship. Politically, spinning had the potential to work across societal, regional, class, caste, and sectarian divisions. The need to learn the technique from another person meant that it brought people together and produced a sense of cooperation at the local level, plugged it into a national imaginary. And simply making small mechanical gestures to spinning would not affect history or politics. Gandhi demanded quality and virtuosity in the spinner and the practice of spinning, a move that enabled followers to commit to the political process, but also excluded others whose political energies were spent elsewhere.
Thank you very much.